So we have a few reactions here to some of the things that were discussed in previous sessions. Regarding the gray area of matter being matter or spirit, Ravindra discussed this on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. Oh, and Srila Prabhupada said that matter is spirit transformed, just as the fire generated by wood is sunlight transformed. Matter becomes re-spiritualized in Krishna consciousness. Yes. University discussions in the field of religion are taking place on Buddhist texts that give a certain kind of account of matter that takes into account time and the state of nirvana. But that's where the Bhaktivedanta Institute comes in, presenting Sankhya, etc. You want to say something more about that? Yeah, it says it. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yes. Then another point. You mentioned stool. It smells in regards to a question about examining other fields of knowledge and endeavor. Your strongly worded answer would tend to discourage devotees. I always discourage devotees just by my presence. From applying their intelligence and willpower in any field except devotional service. I found your view extreme, but I'm sure you have some more moderate ideas. You're probably repressing them because you're a young sannyasi. Smile. Oh, well. Very nice. Let's respond to number two. I just have to... Well done. Right on the nose, huh? And it's your lucky day because I didn't do my homework. And there's a verse which I'm looking for from Ramananda Roy. And in Madhya Lila chapter 8, there is the famous discussion that takes place between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And first they go through the entire process of devotional service and devotional service mixed with fruitive desire, devotional service mixed with the tendency to for liberation, and then finally pure devotional service in different mellows, and then it comes to the topmost platform of pure devotional service of the gopis of Vrindavan. Then after that, the discussion still continue. And that's what we're looking for. So if you bear with me for a moment, because there was a verse that was exactly on this topic. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy would meet time and time again, both sitting in a secluded place and jubilantly discussing the pastimes of Krishna by the question and answer process. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the questions and Sri Ramananda Roy gave the answers. In this way, they were engaged in discussing throughout the night. On one occasion, the Lord inquired, "Of all types of education, which is the most important?" Ramananda Roy replied, "There is no education that is important other than the transcendental devotional service of Krishna." Yes. So, well, that answers that. All right? It's verbatim. I read it to you. So what can I say? The interesting thing is that is the topic of education. Because education is such a thing. So much discussion has been there about the Gurukul. Right? In our movement, it's like a hot topic. It's just been cooling down a little bit, but it's still pretty warm. Gurukul, and one of the things felt is that if we would organize Gurukul today, we would probably do it a lot different than before. We would like be much more sensitive to the needs of the students and their natures and of their future. Because after all, education is an investment in a person's future. And we are looking at how to engage them so that they can function in the world. And obviously, nature and inclination there is very important, because ultimately, no one can repress his nature, as our, as the point is made here, right? So, but we see that Prabhupada simply had a very basic program, totally Krishna conscious, right? Everyone was just trained in transcendental knowledge, and not so much consideration for anything else. So we can really see what kind of motivated Prabhupada, right? Not the mundane, but the transcendental. It is not that he was not aware of these mundane needs and all these considerations. It wasn't that he was kind of simple in a sense, right? And maybe that we should try and minimize Prabhupada and see him according to his time and his background, right? So easily that could be done. We could say, well, he was from India, he grew up in a time when these considerations weren't so much there and it was very traditional, but it wasn't really relating to people that are growing up in a modern time with all its demands, you know, of how to function in society, and like that, one could think that, well, maybe Prabhupada didn't fully understand. But I think that is minimizing Prabhupada, and we should see that we don't fully understand. We don't fully understand how much Prabhupada simply based his entire movement on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and simply how that was the prerequisite. So now it may be more modern, right, to be very open and tolerant to all kinds of studies of all kinds of knowledge. But although that particular day I gave my laboratory example of the stool test, etc., and it may have come across a little strong, for those who missed it, it was based on a report I once got from a laboratory where also a stool test had been done, and on the in the analysis at the bottom there was mentioned smell. I was like thinking about that, and then I compared the study of other types of mundane knowledge to that. We could also express it in another way, though. We could say that everything material, right, should be considered bhoga, right? And bhoga, it must be prepared properly before it's offerable to Krishna. It must be purified first, and then when it is cleansed and nicely prepared and suitable, then it can be offered to Krishna. So if we take any mundane knowledge, then we should take it like bhoga, and we should separate the impurities from that which is offerable, and then offer it to the Lord. And then it's okay. Then it's all right. But I have an example about Yukta Vairagya. It is the example of the tiger that turned pussycat. We tamed a tiger, put him on a little stool, and made him drink milk from a saucer. Right, like that, and go like, oh, you big pussycat. Right? Now, that's all good and well. We may treat tigers like pussycats, but if you turn your back to that pussycat, he may just rip your whole back off. Right? He's still a tiger. So even Yukta Vairagya, engaging mundane things, or let us say Ugra Karma products of an Ugra Karma society in the service of the Lord, is it still has something Ugra, right? Like a computer. It's still a computer. It sucks energy. It just drains. We may use it in the service of Krishna, and it's all transcendental. But meanwhile, it's a monster, sucking our life energy away. Or a car. A car, I don't know how you are when you drive, but I myself, if I'm on the highway, the first hour I'm still a human being. The second hour I've become an extension of the machine. And, you know, anything that comes in front of my wheels, right, I tend to just like, crush it. Or since I have a conscience and I can't really do that, therefore I just yell, "You idiot, get out of my way." But my first instinctive tendency would just be crush. Right? It's only after the intelligence start editing, this is not proper for a Vaishnava, that my mood is, all right, you know, just get out of the way. Move over, and I honk the horn and all these things. The car does something to my nature, right? It changes my whole mood. And so I think that the same applies for mundane knowledge. That it may be utilized in the service of Krishna, but if we make that our focus and our specialty, there is a risk that we shift from a little bit from the bhakti side to the jnana side, and that we because this mundane knowledge has a contaminating effect. And even although we may try to offer things purely in the service of the Lord, are we really doing it? Or are we secretly also satisfying our own desires? Just like I might drive the $20,000 car for Krishna, right? But at the same time, I'm enjoying the $20,000 car for myself also a little bit. And this is the problem. So in the same way, I might simply only to collect all kinds of arguments, to defeat them, read all kinds of mundane literatures, etc. But there may be also a little bit of attachment that I'm cultivating there. And in this way, it could cause an unwanted creeper to grow. Therefore, in general, it may not be required. Now one may say, yes, but for those who are in the Bhaktivedanta Institute, then it was a different thing. Yes, a different thing, but still, there is a risk involved. I can give an example from my own life, which was more centered around temple management, but same thing. Like, a temple manager has the dangerous service of finding fault with others. And that may be in the cause of service, but it doesn't safeguard one from the reactions. There are still reactions. Just as it is explained that when Krishna came into the cave where Muchukunda was sleeping, and then, okay, Muchukunda was woken up by Kaliyavana, who was burned to ashes and all that, and after that, there was a discussion between the Supreme Lord and Muchukunda. And there, it is pointed out that Muchukunda still had to undergo further purification. Although Muchukunda had the darshan of the Lord, it was said there that Muchukunda, so the Lord explained, as a kshatriya, had killed many animals, etc., to practice the art of fighting. And it was not that he was saved from the reactions from that activity. Right? Rather, he had to purify himself from that. So In this way, we can understand that any particular occupation, right, has its hazards, and there certainly are hazards in associating with mundane knowledge. Sattva-vit prabhu. Well, okay, but definitely, it is said that Mucchukunda was not ready to go back to the spiritual world, and that he first needed more purification. He got the mercy of the Lord for his sincerity, but the Lord instructed him to purify himself from the reactions of killing all these animals, and that otherwise he would have, take the karma for it, and karma meant, obviously, another birth and all that. Arjuna was more transcendental. So when one is totally transcendental on the pure platform of devotional service, yes, then one may not be affected. Then it is all right. But then again, better we are careful, because there is a risk involved in these matters. And in our state, we may find that we are not so transcendental after all. And therefore that particular day, I spoke out a little strong about other knowledge. It's not that we never use other knowledge in our preaching. I also have the Encyclopedia Britannica on my computer and use it sometimes to check on things, or if we deal with an academic audience, the presentation might be a little different than anywhere else. But then again, we see that Prabhupada, just wherever he was, spoke the same philosophy. In a university, at best, he would say that where is there a department, right, which studies the soul, something like that, he might say, in which university. But for the rest, he didn't go much further into adjusting to the university audience. He would just give him straight Bhagavad Gita. In regards to other knowledge or anything like that, I don't think that my answer, using the example of the laboratory, may kind of bring out a feeling that my answer is of a very rigid, condemning nature, and such rigidity and condemnation appears to have a little passion mixed into it. If someone strongly speaks out against something, it feels passionate. And I think that therefore the questioner mentioned, you're probably repressing them because you are a young sannyasi, to kind of indicate that kind of passion that might be there. I would think that indeed we should not passionately reject this and that. We should rather very thoughtfully reject in the mode of goodness. The sannyasi is meant to remind all classes of men of the pure spiritual path, because the sannyasi has the advantage that he doesn't have to compromise. His business is simply pure devotional service. And in fact, if he's not engaged in pure devotional service, then he is compromised. Whereas anyone else may have so many other duties that are somewhat of a distraction and that make it more difficult to engage in pure devotional service. So it is a sannyasi's duty to remind everyone of the pure standard of devotional service. And it is the duty of all other ashrams to try and come as much as possible to pure devotional service as well. Because pure devotional service is certainly possible. Like it is mentioned that just as there are four types of sannyasis, there are four types of brahmacharis, four types of grihastas, and four types of vanaprastas. Now, amongst the four types of grihastas, it is said that one class of grihasta is described to be the accumulator. He is the accumulator, and basically, he is trying to lord it over and enjoy the material energy. One might say, well, but what about being an accumulator for Krishna? Again, the tiger-turned-pussycat principle applies there. Yukta Vairagya is a beautiful thing, but one must, with Yukta Vairagya, always be very careful considering what is my capacity, what is my power. Do I have the power to engage this particular thing in the service of Krishna? That we have to look at. If there's anything mundane that we wish to engage in the service of Krishna, we must first see if we have the strength to do it. Otherwise, we'd better be very, very careful. So, the accumulator's position is certainly dangerous in Krishna consciousness and generally not recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogam, that renunciation and transcendental knowledge are essential in the process of Bhakti Yogam. So, considering all that, the position of the accumulator may not so be so beneficial. So another position is the position of the professional. Right? So a professional, for the sake of his profession, has to engage in so many mundane activities. Right? And he has to keep up with his profession, etc. So much of his energy goes there. The two other types of grihastas are very renounced. One is kind of living with whatever comes easily at its own accord. And then the fourth class is still more renounced and is just surviving on what's left over in the marketplace and on the fields of grain, etc. A very... very brahminical type of grihasta. So, Prabhupada, in the purport here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, says that the grihastas within our movement, and we should just look at the movement as it was then, not as it is now. Nowadays, you know, we have the greater ISKCON, but then it was more defined. Within the movement meant living in the temple, practically speaking. So, it meant the grihastas that are living in the temple or directly doing service in the temple, they should not try to come up to the standard of life of those who are living in the world. Prabhupada's basically making that point. They should be satisfied to live at a more simple level. So, in general, it's not just a matter of being a sannyasi, being a young sannyasi, an old sannyasi, a skinny sannyasi, or a fat sannyasi, but rather that it is for all, right? For all ashrams and all conditions of life, not a prohibition, right? It's not that I meant to say, don't ever read anything else outside of the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and as I said earlier on, and other books as a chutney, a little bit, right? And if you don't do it, you'll be shot, kind of thing, right? In a sort of a preaching, like a fascist sannyasi with German Nazi boots and all that, right? And that I would like to purify I should not do German accents. I'm sorry, for the jazz. I can't help myself. I've seen too many movies. You see, it's nothing. It's nothing against Germany, but I have a colorful mind, and then I get carried away by the role. So I sometimes do accents. Anyway, so that we are seeing that Krishna consciousness is presented in an oppressive way. In some parts of the world, we hear some sort of outcry that we have been pushed like that for so long and we had to repress our nature and there was no consideration for the individual and all that. So no, I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to give the responsibility to every individual to, and all that I am trying to, call for in my, explanation is the mode of goodness. In not in passion rejecting, nor in passion accepting, but in the mode of goodness, the mode of thoughtfulness to deeply think, do we need this thing? Like an advice I've sometimes given to brahmacharis may also sound very rigid, but my advice to the brahmachari was that clean your room and put everything outside, everything that's in the room, put it outside. Afterwards, clean the room very nicely, broom, water, etc. And then, as you start putting things back in, think three times. Do I really need this? Do I really need this? Do I really need this? Right? And if there's any doubt, don't put it back in the room. And I think that that mood is, to some extent, there in the life of every devotee. Right? Even although in the Grihastha ashram, or in any ashram, when one, you know, like in my room, I have so much junk. I have junk in my suitcase that I'm carrying around the world, and I'm wondering, why do I have it in my suitcase? What benefit is this, and why don't I throw it out? And I think, well, and then I do throw it out, and then later I need it, and see, it's like all these things. Still, some reservation. I think a Vaishnava should be careful of the material energy. And I think Prabhupada did say that the problem with the Western people is that they're not sufficiently afraid of Maya, of the illusory energy. So in that spirit, I don't think a little care is out of place. So does that balance the stooly statement a little? Are you more satisfied now? Or you're going to get on my case more? Yeah, Varnashram is such a thing, huh? I must admit that I never had much love for Varna Ashram, especially the Varnas. I've always had some sort of, I don't know, some sort of, as soon as people started by Varna Ashram, I feel some inner resistance, you know? It just, every time, I kind of like, and as soon as we go about Varnas and designations, I always get kind of ideas that the Sudras get blue t-shirts on, you know? The Kshatriyas, or what is it, Vaishyas get stripes, right? Because they are mixed passion and ignorance. So they get stripes, red and blue. And then, you know, the Kshatriyas pure red and the Brahmanas yellow t-shirts. Something like that kind of thing. I like Jayananda, who was like everything, you know? Was Jayananda a Sudra because he fixed cars? Right. Or was by inclination, or was Jayananda a Vaishya because he sold incense? Or was Jayananda a Kshatriya when he threw out some rowdy elements from the temple? Or was Jayananda a Brahmana when he was explaining the philosophy in preaching? over a pot of hot halva. You know, he was so transcendental. Right? I like all these transcendental verses. Naham vipra nachanara patir napivaishana sudra or sarvopadi vinir muktam tat paratvina nirmalam. You know, anyabilasita sunyam. I like all those verses that I'm not a Brahman, not a Sudra, not a Vaishya, not any of these things, simply a servant. And maybe I'm old-fashioned or old-fascist or something like that. I don't know what it is. But as soon as we go about... when we speak about our propensity and about engaging in the heart, right? Then some people equate that with Dvarna Ashram. But I don't. I really don't. You know, to hell with Dvarna Ashram, right? Is my hidden feeling that I don't so usually so strongly speak out, but today I'm honest. At the risk of getting again many email messages. The last time that I called Dvarna Ashram a crutch, you know, and the legs, I refer to legs as the legs of hearing and chanting. That time, the next day, I had 140 email messages from all over the world. I mean, people were writing me from places that I even never heard from. And they were all very concerned, you know. A transcript overnight of what I had said had been posted and had been sent all around. I was amazed how fast they were. I was impressed by the efficiency. And anyway, I decided not to give too much response because I thought it will just multiply like an avalanche, you know. From 140, it will go to 1,400 messages. So let it just sleep. Dvarna Ashram has its value. I think it must be considered when our nature is so strong that it clearly comes out, that it clearly manifests itself in a particular mood. I think then we should not deny it. But I don't think that if the nature is not coming out so strong in a particular way, that we have to sit down and start doing some deep introspection and what is my nature? What is my varna? What would it be? You know, maybe I'm a kind of like mixed caste, you know, a pratiloma, an anuloma, or something, a bit of both. I mean, what am I, right? All that. I also find that the process of devotional service is purifying us over the years. That also we are finding in the scriptures. I'm just trying to remember the verse. Bhagavatam, second chapter, famous verse, which is saying that the modes of ignorance and passion disappear by the process of devotional service and that one becomes titam sattva prasidati is the last line. But the first word, just the first. Tadara jastamo bhava. Yes. Kamalobadiyasche matevititan vidhi. Tadarajas. So it says that rajas and tamas are disappearing. No? So that means that we're changing. Also, Srila Prabhupada made this comment about chanting the holy name. And he said that if we chant the holy name once, that we've changed. I've done that sometimes in different temples, that, and I ask the devotees, all right, you know, let's do it. Let's chant. Have a good look. Hare Krishna. Have I changed? What was the change? Yeah. Any changes you saw? Some lines disappeared. Yeah? My face changed. Like that. Now, Prabhupada says the real changes are that the subtle body has changed. It has changed. So the progression in Krishna consciousness is accelerated. Normally, the progression through the varnas may go over many lifetimes, but in Krishna consciousness, it's accelerated, and we may go through different varnas in one lifetime. It may change by the process of devotional service. And someone who started off like a total sudra may develop very brahminical qualities just by the purification of Krishna consciousness. But those who somehow or other have a particular strong identification with a particular varna, for them it may be inevitable. So that's kind of where I would want to put the emphasis. So I think in varnashram discussions, it's like how much emphasis you put. And some people say that varnashram is going to save us, right? This is what we're lacking. This is what we should have. I don't know. I personally think we should have more hearing, chanting, and more spiritual depth. You know, like here in Vrindavan, maybe I got it from Vrindavan, my dislike for varnashram, because here in Vrindavan, nobody cares so much, you know, about that, right? Here they look more like what kind of Vaishnava are you? Like the caste divisions are not so strong. When the barber, like here we used to have a barber, and he was here in Prabhupada's days, and he was a simple barber. It was a very low caste, you know, a barber, contaminated. But he was very Krishna conscious, so everyone was treating the barber with great respect, like an exalted Vaishnava, and he really was. And it used to be fun to get shaved by him. Yes, he shaved Prabhupada, that's right. He shaved Prabhupada. And it was fun to be shaved by him because he was talking about Krishna and all these things. And sometimes he would tell you something about the temple, that he was worried about this and that, and you could see he was also a devotee of the temple. So in Vrindavan, you know, like, even if you walk around with a big Brahmin thread, it may not mean so much. So many take their Brahmin thread off, right? So many born in Brahmin families take them off just to renounce all designations. So Rupa and Sanatan Goswami kind of implemented this mood of Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam. Anyway, your turn again. So I don't mean to bash, you know, like you all over the head or something, but if we are becoming the International Society for Varnashram Consciousness and then offer all that to Krishna, isn't that a little... where's the exciting? Doesn't our movement become really boring then, you know? It's like, well, everybody is just trying to find his nice little niche, kind of, and go for a gradual purification. Can't we have any, like, heroes that just do something, like, really bold and far out, like just saying, let's get out of the material world, let's just forget it, let's just surrender, let's just do something impossible for Krishna and Prabhupada, something a little more exciting? Okay. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so I'm not speaking against Varna Ashram. I love it. It comes from Krishna. Chaturvarnam, Mayashristam, Gunakarma Vibhagasa. It's Krishna's arrangement. We find in Bhagavad Gita. So it's very nice. It's perfect, it's natural. We have this in the material world, and I don't want to deny it or something like that. But sometimes I just want to ignore it. Just sometimes I just want to say, anyway, this, it may not be my nature, but anyway, I'm going to do it anyway for Krishna, kind of thing. And if everyone does that, then I find it very enlivening, you know, like really, I become enthusiastic when I see that. And if I would see a whole society where everyone is nicely following Varna Ashram, I would just think, my God, you know, what has become of our movement? It's become really, really boring. Very boring. But it's good if it's Sansidhir Haritosanam, isn't it? But in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see all these devotees, you know, who are like sometimes externally, they're still acting according to caste. But the others are accepting them as transcendental. Advaita Acharya is offering the Shraddha ceremony. He's feeding Haridas Thakur instead of the Brahmanas, right? And although Haridas Thakur comes from such a low birth, there's also the story of Kalidas. Kalidas, who was going after the remnants of all the Vaishnavas, and he was always trying to get them from everything. And then Jadu Thakur was a Vaishnava from a Sudra family. And Kalidas went there and wanted remnants from Jadu Thakur also, but he wouldn't give, no question. And he said, I'm a low fallen Sudra, how can I give my remnants? No, no, no. But then Kalidas made a plan, and he brought out these delicious mangoes just in the early evening time, just, you know, when it was time to eat like that. And then he was presenting them and taking his leave nicely and then waiting outside the house and then waiting for them to have the mangoes and then throw out the peels and the seed, right? So then Kalidas was waiting and Tukulat licked the plates and sucked the pit and chewed like that. He did get the remnants, and then he was jumping in ecstasy that he got the remnants. And for that, that spirit of seeing so transcendental, he got the special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was washing his feet at the Jagannath Mandir in Puri, then his servant Govinda had these strict instructions to make sure that no one would take that water from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. But Kalidas was very bold, and Govinda couldn't stop him. He just put his hand out and drank the water. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did it three times. Only then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, stop, stop. I have given you more mercy than anyone else, he said. I mean, cannot go any further than this, right? So just because of his great faith in the Vaishnavas, he got it. Right? So for his transcendental vision of seeing Vaishnavas. So that kind of is nice, no? I mean, that kind of touches my heart more than a strict Varnashram model. But a kind of a flexible Varnashram model in our society that I can relate to, that I like. You know, like where we say, like a little bit of Varnashram, why not? You know, that sounds good. But a rigid one, so I'm for the soft Varnashram model, the very soft, pliable, where the borders between the Varnas kind of merge and melt a little. I'm not for the hard, rigid application of it. Then I become obstinate and rebellious. See. What is the Varna of a Dutchman? We are rebels by nature. Every Dutchman is a rebel, you know. We are a nation of rebels. And that's our trademark. So what Varna is that? Or can it be in all Varnas? Can one be a rebel? Rebellious Brahmana, rebellious Kshatriya, rebellious Vaishna, and a rebellious Sudra. This is a question. Any answer? And he's really gunning for it today, Tattvavit. Because now he goes for my spiritual master, you know, in the next one. He says, your Guru Maharaj is boycotting Vrindavan ISKCON for various reasons. Could you draw any parallels between this and the manner and way in which Lord Chaitanya dealt with any particular political and philosophical or cultural problem? Tattvavit, what kind of question is that? I mean, I find it difficult to speak for Jaitvaita Maharaj. How can I do that, right? He can express himself much more refined than I can, and I would misrepresent him. So I'm afraid to do that, you know, to represent him like that. I could speak about, because I've noted that sometimes I paraphrase something, and then he doesn't like the way I've said it, you know, at all. Right? But Lord Chaitanya certainly stayed aloof from all politics. At the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was a Muslim invasion, right? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't start a revolutionary movement to overthrow the government. In fact, he ignored it completely, and he simply chanted the holy name anywhere and everywhere, even when the Muslims were, when Muslim governors were in control in areas like that, he didn't care. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would also go there. There's that description of how he came to the border of Orissa, and he was accompanied by the Mahapatra who'd been sent with him by the king of Orissa to protect him. And then they had to cross this river, and on the other side there was a Muslim governor who was a drunkard and who used to live from piracy. And basically, they were very worried that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu might get trouble. But the spies of the Muslim ruler had already seen that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had so many followers. And the fact that he could understand that he had to be some sort of transcendental personality, because people were following him without getting any payment, right? So he's saying he must be a prophet. Otherwise, why would people follow? And the result was that he began to think that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Lord. He came incognito to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, got the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and became a devotee of Mahaprabhu, and then gave a very nice boat to take Mahaprabhu a long way along the river. But there were many pirates there, so there were some soldiers also, but everyone was afraid of the pirate, but not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who began to chant Hare Krishna very loud, and didn't care. And finally got all the devotees to chant also. And instead of being very silent in the dead of night, they had a big kirtan in that boat, and nothing happened. No pirates came or nothing. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing a very transcendental example. And certainly that, I think Prabhupada was, reconfirming that for us also. He was not kind of saying, well, that was for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he was so transcendental. No, that sort of became the standard. Whether we were on a lower level on the transcendental ladder or not, that didn't matter. Yes. I mean, I have my own, I have some about philosophical deviations. I have something, you know, that I presented in another context. But some years ago, I considered that the Madhyam, the Kanista, the Madhyam, and the Uttama Adhikari had obviously different levels by which they could penetrate into the absolute truth. And that everything looks different from the perspective of a Kanista, Madhyam, or Uttam according to their realization. And then we developed a model of ISKCON, which was in three layers. At the top, there was the organization. In the middle, there was the perfect spiritual process. And at the bottom, there was the divine intervention of the Supreme Lord. Right? So these three were the layers of ISKCON: organization, perfect spiritual process, and divine intervention of the Lord. So that one should see ISKCON in these three ways. Now that the Kanista Adhikari cannot go very deep. I can do it on the board, actually, yeah? Because maybe that's better. Should I do that on the board? Yeah. These three layers are... obviously, a Kanista Adhikari, it's a neophyte devotee. He cannot get very close to the Lord. He cannot know really what the Lord wants. And also, he's just starting the spiritual process, so he cannot go very deep yet. So, therefore, the Kanista Adhikari will be more preoccupied with the surface. He will be more preoccupied with the organization. And he cannot go very deep into the spiritual practices. So whenever he goes into the spiritual practices, he stays on the surface. The Madhyam Adhikari is surrendering, is really applying himself to the process, so he goes deeper and deeper into the process. On the organizational level, there's politics, there's so many things going on, etc. There's confusion, there's deviations. And when deviations happen, it can really upset the organizational level. Right? There, deviations seem to spoil everything, and that they can just totally spoil the whole thing. Now, if you have a deviation, what about deviations spoiling the second level, the level of the spiritual process? Well, I would say that it can be compared to an oil spill of a tanker. Right? There's a tanker and some accident, big oil spill covers the whole surface of the ocean with oil slick on top. So what happens is that the animals that are on the surface, the birds, they really get it bad, right? The fish that don't swim very deep, they die, right? But the deep sea fish, they're not affected. They're not affected. They're just... So in that way, we can say the deviations affecting the spiritual process, those who cannot go deep, they get affected. The Kanista, who cannot go deep in the process, get affected. The Madhyam Adhikari, who is deeper, gets less affected. Those who are very deep, they don't get very much affected at all. And deviation cannot permanently affect the spiritual process, because just as the oil slick is pushed away by the wind and waves and finally winds up on the land, in this way, the water has a self-purifying effect. So like that, I think deviation applies to our movement. And therefore, when we are applying ourselves strictly to the process, then we don't have to worry, because you see that deviations, people that deviate, they gradually remove themselves. Right? They take distance from the pure teachings of Prabhupada. And first it may be a philosophical distance, but in due course of time, it begins to manifest in a physical distance as well. So therefore, the process itself has a self-purifying effect. It kind of throws off these kind of philosophies, right? And people that develop or embrace deviant philosophy will just wash away from the process of devotional service. It cannot really affect the ocean of devotion. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is also mentioned that the volcanoes of Mayavad that are within the ocean of devotion, right? They don't have any real effect. They can make some bubbles, right? But they can never really disturb the ocean of transcendental nectar. So I think that what to speak of the divine plan of the Supreme Lord, which is the third level of our movement and the most important level of our movement, it is Lord Chaitanya who is spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, and we are simply given the chance to get the credit for it, and meanwhile to get the mercy in carrying forward Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. But it is Mahaprabhu who's flooding the entire universe, and it's going on right now. Every day, new people are being affected by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. Like one example I sometimes give, we hear so much about extraterrestrials. In Amsterdam, I know a guy, He has 10 cameras on his house. He's very wealthy. He's got 10 cameras in all directions. And like, he's filming them, you know. He's filming the UFOs, right? And takes photos, and he has like UFO photos and the whole thing, right? And he's like totally convinced about this. And so many people are convinced about extraterrestrials. You can buy T-shirts and all kinds of things, right? Extraterrestrials is a topic these days. So I think that by now, the extraterrestrials with their little antennas must have picked up the Maha Mantra. And therefore, I think that the latest vehicles that have joined our Sankirtan fleet are flying saucers. Huh? That's what I think. So, Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement is spreading all over the universe without a doubt, in so many ways, and it's all his pastime. And he's laughing. He's laughing. And people get confronted again and again with the same Sankirtan movement and get purified, whether they want or not. Whether they stuff their ears when the Harinam comes by. It's too loud anyway. It won't work. Can't block it out. And with time, it will act. So indeed, the Sankirtan movement is flooding the entire universe. And if there's a little problem on the top, in our movement, in the organizational level, and things like that, well, that comes and goes, and we can work on it, right? Especially if we go deep into level 2, because then Lord Chaitanya starts to relate to us more. The more we go into level 2, the more Lord Chaitanya starts to reciprocate with us. And then he'll empower us more and more. And then we can fix up the politics, the organization, and all the problems. So the real solution is a spiritual one. Yes, yes. Well, that is there. But nonetheless, I mean, we all know that if we don't go deep into the spiritual process, forget it, right? We've seen only too many who went off the deep end, straight off the cliff, right? After they thought they didn't need to chant rounds, that their work was so transcendental, right? That, well, you know, only got a few rounds behind in the name of preaching or in the name of service. It was all one. In one sense, you know, I use the word organization here. We could use some other words for it too. But Prabhupada did say at times that the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is an opportunity, right, for becoming Krishna conscious. So it's like you cannot totally equate it. Lord Chaitanya is independent from ISKCON, doing his own thing, and ISKCON is just it's a branch of the Chaitanya tree. It is the Chaitanya tree, but it's described as a branch of the Chaitanya tree. It's not the trunk. Lord Chaitanya is the trunk, and ISKCON is a branch of the Chaitanya tree. So in that way, we point at the branch and say it's the tree, but in another sense, the branch. And we can do that. We can point at the branch and say it's the tree, but in another sense, it's not the tree, it's the branch. I think in that way we can... It's a very good question. How can we estimate how great our capacity is in Yukta Vairagya? I think we should keep a safe margin, right? We should feel... We should keep an eye on ourselves, right? And if we start to if we start to enjoy all these items that we're using too much in themselves, and not so much the fact that we have made progress in Krishna's service, that we've made some progress for Krishna, but that we start to like really enjoy the items in itself, I think there we have to take that as alarming signals, and we should be a little careful. Now, sometimes we may still have to maintain, right? But if we can simplify, there is no harm. If we simplify our interaction with the material energy, that is, that's safe. I also once did a seminar on the sadhu mark, or the path of the sadhu. And in there, there was one theme that dealt with that that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta made like a bridge to the Western world, to the modern world. He went from tradition to modern times, and he made like a bridge between the two. So what we had then was if we have a bridge from tradition to modern times, then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta came from tradition, but then acted in modern times. But we are sadhus who come from modern times, acting in modern times. We have very little tradition. Right? So for us, sometimes you wonder if it would be a good idea to go back over the bridge a little bit to the tradition and like take up a little more of the traditional ways. If we look at the prominent acharyas in our sampradaya, then see how renounced they were, how austere they were, how renounced the six Goswamis were. They left everything. They wouldn't practically touch the minimum of material things, and so many others. So a bit of that spirit might help us, you know, who come from the West and have never ever lived, right? To not have money in your pocket, you know, to not have a watch, it's like to, you know, like not have a place to stay, all these kind of things, almost inconceivable to the Western mind. Right? So, a little simplification would not be bad, would make it more safe. So it's something where we have to take responsibility ourselves, this Yukta Vairagya thing, where the borderline lies. We have to decide for ourselves. And some take a little more risk and some take a little less risk. It's a fact that we must take risk for preaching. We cannot just live safely, nicely in the forest. No, we have to take risk for preaching. And even dovetail a few of our material attachments for preaching. That's there. But the balance is to be kept. And in our private life, we can make a distinction between working life and private life. Private life, if we can keep it simple and renounced, will give us strength. And if we keep it full of opulence and facility, we'll become weak. And too many became weakened. We've seen how so many devotees, irregardless of varna or ashram, regardless of varna and ashram, didn't make it. Right? So, it seems that in this time, in 2001, all of us are becoming a little more thoughtful than before, and a little more careful, and we begin to value tradition a little more than just being totally transcendental. A little bit of varnashram, therefore, we feel is certainly relevant, and Yukta Vairagya, we're a little more careful. In the past was more Yukta than Vairagya. Nowadays we begin to look a little more at Vairagya also than at Yukta. And I think that's a symptom of our maturing in Krishna consciousness. See, it's like not only are we individually maturing, but collectively our society is also maturing. So the mood of our society is changing over the years. And we are maturing. We've gained with that, and we may have also lost something. We may have lost our childlike, innocent enthusiasm, right, of the early ISKCON. That we may have lost now a little bit. That kind of young, naive innocence where you think anything is possible and we're going to do it, right? Now has kind of been replaced with a mood from, well, we have learned our lesson from time, you know. It's not a quick process. It's very gradual, like that. I think what is required in Krishna consciousness is individual maturity. Individual maturity. We have to rely on the intelligence of the individual. Right? This movement is for intelligent people who are applying spiritual principles in their own life. Not those who walk on the hands of others or constantly are guided. But that intelligence means we must be very careful that we are not taking unnecessary risk. Okay, I'm just a quick answer on the last question. And for a preacher, what kind of... For a preacher, what kind of heart should we have or develop? I think it takes all hearts. Because I think that we should have an honest heart as a preacher. But true honesty does not exist unless one is dedicated to Krishna. So true honesty is only available if there is purity. But if there's no honesty, I don't think we can be successful in our preaching. So I think a preacher must have an honest heart, but it takes all kinds. And one should preach according to his nature. Not that we try to imitate another preacher who's different than we are, and it doesn't make sense, right? If we preach according to our nature, then we'll find that like-minded people will become especially inspired by our preaching. And in the end, everyone is meant, everyone is an instrument in the hands of Krishna, meant for a particular purpose. And we should simply utilize the facility that we have in the service of Krishna like that. But first we need to purify the heart, otherwise how can we be honest in our preaching? And then it will not be very strong. Prabhupada told some devotees that in preaching you just show people how happy you are. That's preaching. Yeah. So that's another thing. We should be happy. The condition of the heart should be happy. Otherwise how can we preach? Take to Krishna consciousness. What? Not possible, huh? Of course, Prabhupada could look very serious, isn't it? With the corners of his mouth down, really down, so far down, and then say that this was his greatest moment of ecstasy. So, people sometimes had difficulty with that. Me too, actually, because the first Dutch Bhagavad Gita had a picture on the back, you know, of Prabhupada, like with the corners of the mouth really, really down, super down, right? And I was always looking at that picture, like, wow, what a... Whew. That was really intense. Couldn't appreciate it then. I think... Thank you for the questions. Must have been Krishna's arrangement because I didn't do any homework today. So you saved the day, Tatvavit, and also Deva Prabhu. And, I put a lot of energy in trying to derive certain themes from the CC and then, take, examples and quotes to underbuild what I was saying. And I guess I just needed one day just to relax and to just speak as it was coming. So thanks for the questions. Meanwhile, that means that I can't cover all the themes that I would have liked to cover. Some big themes I have not covered. I have not covered Gopi Bhav, right? I have not really covered Mayavad, right? And nor have I spoken very much on the holy name. So these are three areas that actually still need some mention. So tomorrow I'll just touch upon them with some pointed remarks and then summarize the whole kind of presentation into a conclusion. Yeah, it's like this. Both are the themes. Actually, I mean, it's just the right side corner is specifying it a little further, but the left side column is not the title of the chapter, right? It's kind of the main theme of each chapter, and then the right column is dividing it up a little more. And as you can notice, one I just didn't have the time to do. I mean, because it was a rush job, this paper. And so there's one little gap there. Anyway, I'm thinking of publishing a book on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it would take a lot more work than just what is done here. But along these lines, just go on and do some sort of study guide or whatever. Okay, I thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.